You are listening to Kilometer Zero by the Cycling Podcast, powered by Super Sapiens, energy management for committed athletes and coaches.
This is part two of Danish Dynamite, the story of the rise, the fall and the rebirth of Danish cycling. In part one, we heard about Bjarne Riis, who won the 1996 Tour de France, but later admitted that his victory was powered by the banned blood-boosting drug EPO. Danish cycling was to suffer a second significant scandal at the Tour de France. Michael Rasmussen was wearing the yellow jersey in 2007, deep into the race, just a few days from Paris, almost certain to win, until he was stopped in his tracks, caught in a web of deceit. A few years ago, I spoke to Rasmussen for an episode of Kilometer Zero, and he wasn't entirely repentant.
Kæmpe præstation af Michael Rasmussen. Vi klapper af ham for andet år i træk i Tour de France. Laver han sådan et stunt? Hvor er det her stort?
Well, it's a long story, and it started a long time before 2007. I'd been going quite well in the years prior to 2007, and felt that the time was coming where I could actually go into the race as a potential winner. Obviously, I didn't get to finish the race. My own team took me out of the race at a point where I was actually leading by more than 3 minutes to Contador, just 3 days away from Paris.
I have made a mistake, and UCI has given me a written warning. No, sorry, a recorded warning for that administrative mistake that I have made. And I accept that. I take full responsibility for it.
Prior to the tour, I had received some warnings for my whereabouts. And then suddenly during the tour, the director of the Danish Cycling Federation, he was revealing the confidential information about the whereabouts warnings I had. And that caused quite some disturbance and turbulence during the tour.
What was the reason for giving false information on your whereabouts form for the UCI?
Well, that was the reason so I could prepare myself for performance-enhancing drugs at that time.
I have been licensed in Mexico for 2 years prior to this year, and I have not been tested by the Mexican Federation.
You obviously said you were in Mexico, I presume, because you felt that the Mexican authorities were very unlikely to test you while you were there, and that perhaps the Danish authorities wouldn't travel to Mexico, whereas they might, higher chance that they might pay the money to travel to Italy to test you. But it emerged that you had been spotted out training by a commentator, former professional rider, commentator on Rai television in Italy, Davide Cassani, and this information came to light in quite an explosive press conference in Po, didn't it, during the Tour de France, or had it already come out?
No, actually, Davide Cassani, he said it on, during stage 8, when I won the stage to Tignia and got the yellow jersey. But the story didn't come out until I won my second stage on Col du Bisque after the day after the press conference, and that's when everything exploded.
I'm sorry that this situation is coming out now, at the moment when I'm wearing the yellow jersey, and it's harming a sport that I dearly love, and it's harming the Tour de France and the ASO.
But that press conference was quite, there was quite an atmosphere in the room, wasn't there? Because your Rabobank team brought the team's lawyer with them. You looked like you were under fire. You had faced quite a bit of questioning in the days leading up because, you know, you're in the yellow jersey and this story was rumbling away. Did you feel at that point that the game was up, that you weren't going to survive?
No, I didn't, and nobody in the team did, because we were still just talking about whereabouts, and nobody has ever been kicked out of the Tour de France for not telling the truth. As said before, I was allowed to have 3 warnings, I only had 2.
It's funny, I'm thinking back now to how it all came out, because the bottom line was the scenario that you were involved in, it did give the impression that the reason you'd given incorrect information was because you were trying to mask doping.
Yeah, that's the obvious. But nevertheless, you cannot pull people out because they're not telling the truth.
Did you feel at that point that you were obviously lying to the world's media? I guess you didn't feel any sense of sort of guilt or concern about that.
I guess you can say that lying was a part of the job description at that time. You know, once a professional athlete or cyclist is asked, have you ever taken drugs? There's only one right answer, and that's no. You know, you will never ever get the answer yes. So, you know, it's even stupid to ask the question. You should might as well ask me if I'd been unfaithful to my wife while sitting in front of her. There's only one right answer, it's no.
So really the whole thing was a charade?
Well, you know, you could not expect anything else. We were riding for yellow.
I want to make absolutely clear that I've had out of competition tests prior to the Tour de France, and up until this morning, I've had 14 anti-doping tests during the tour, and all the results are negative. And I do support my team and our sponsor Rabobank in a fight against doping and a clean sport.
And so, what happened later that evening in the Rabobank team hotel?
Well, I was confronted with the fact that Theo de Rooy, he had received a phone call from a Dutch journalist. And he had information that David Cassani had seen me in Italy. So Theo de Rooy, he comes into my room and he's asking me, did Cassani see you in Italy? He did not ask me, have you not been to Mexico? He asked me, did Cassani see you in Italy? Because he knew very well that Mexico was never part of the game.
But the team were in on what you were doing. They knew, you know, how you prepared yourself.
Well, the team, they had been bringing, carrying blood bags for me. They had been carrying around EPO in the bus for me and other riders. They had been carrying around insulin. They had been issuing false certificates for cortisone and, well, you name it.
And so you thought you'd get away with it?
Yeah. There were no rules in the book at that time that could take me out of the race. According to the rule book, I was allowed to have three warnings, and this had very great consequences for me by just having two. The only ones that actually could take me out of the race was my own employer, Rabobank, and they, of course, knew where they could find me all along. I never lied to my team.
But just to... You say that you were within the rules in the sense that you could have three misses on your whereabouts, but the whole point of the whereabouts was for people to give honest information rather than try to game the system. It strikes me there you were trying to game the system, because isn't ultimately the biggest rule that you shouldn't take performance-enhancing drugs, or is the rule that you shouldn't get caught taking them?
Well, I think that in the environment that I was... in at that time, taking performance-enhancing drugs was certainly more the rule than the exception. So in that sense, I certainly did not feel that I was breaking any rules towards my competitors, or at least what I thought were my competitors. And in fact, I didn't really care about what anybody else they did. I just tried to do the best for myself.
So your opinion at the time was that everyone was at it, everyone was doping in those years up to 2007?
Well, I can't say that everybody was, of course. But it's my clear feeling that just looking in the history books at a raised number of riders, they were. I think if you look at the top 20 from the Tour 2005, starting with Lance Armstrong, Jan Ulrich, Ivan Basso, Levi Leipheimer, Vinokourov, Landis, myself, and the list goes on and on. It's hard to believe that I would be the only one left in 2007.
So was it your view then that You wanted to win the Tour de France, and you would do it by any means possible.
I just wanted to prepare myself the best possible way I could.
So you didn't see it as cheating?
I didn't think about it as cheating. I'd been cycling for that at that point for many, many years. So the thoughts about cheating never crossed my mind. It was just a matter of preparing myself in the best possible manner for the race.
Det her var det allervigtigste. Det er manden, der kun er et minut efter Michael Rasmussen i klassementet. Nu er han altså op hos Contador igen, og Evans er væk.
Michael kører for at vinde Tour de France nu.
When you eventually spoke to the anti-doping authorities, you admitted that you'd been using performance-enhancing drugs since 1998. I mean, almost a decade before you were finally caught, and then you weren't caught by a test. You were caught by an administrative procedure. So presumably you had the feeling that you could take these substances with impunity, without the fear of getting caught. Was there never any knot in your stomach thinking, if I get, you know, I'm playing with fire here, I might get caught, my career is on the line?
I was never ever afraid to take a drug test in my life. I never took any chances and never ran any risks at that time. I bear in mind that I was actually racing the Tour de France with a hematocrit of 43, very far from the line of 50.
So did you almost have your own kind of moral code, or was it more of a practical code where you thought, I'll keep my numbers within a certain limit so I don't trip the wire, so I don't get into trouble?
I just felt that I did what was needed to fulfill my ambitions.
You are listening to Kilometer Zero by the Cycling Podcast, powered by Super Sapiens, energy management for committed athletes and coaches. Go to supersapiens.com for more on how to track your energy levels and fuel for success.
Matteo Trentin fra Pont, Mads Pedersen kommer ud til venstre. Mads Pedersen kører for at blive verdensmester. Mads Pedersen!
Han
gør det!
Han vinder!
Mads Pedersen! 23 år for Lejre bliver verdensmester.
Nej, var det sindssygt. Mads for helvede.
Danish cycling has recovered. A new generation of riders have burst onto the scene and secured some of the biggest results in the country's cycling history. A world title for Mads Pedersen, a Tour of Flanders for Kasper Askren, stage wins in the Grand Tours, and last year, second place in the Tour de France for a young hopeful Jonas Vingegaard, who was one of the stars of the team presentation back in Copenhagen. There are high hopes in Denmark that if anything goes awry with Primoz Roglic's challenge, Vingegaard will be allowed to step into the fray. This year's start in Denmark has been long awaited, and last year, before the Grand Depart in Copenhagen, Richard Moore spoke to some of the Danish riders about their excitement and anticipation ahead of a start in their home country.
I wanted to ask you about Copenhagen next year. That must be something you'd love to do and be part of.
Absolutely.
This is Chris Juul Jensen, who's riding for Bike Exchange.
I think one of the proudest cycling nations is Denmark. You know, they really welcome any bike race that is in Denmark. Tour of Denmark, which, you know, I have the privilege of winning, it's always renowned for its massive crowds, good atmosphere. And there's a strong sporting culture in general in Denmark, so of course starting the biggest bike race on home soil would be massive, absolutely.
The other aspect of this Grand Depart in Denmark is just the boom in Danish cycling. I mean, the number of Danish riders really performing extremely well. Is there a reason for that? I mean, what do you think? Is it just coincidence, or does it owe to anything that's being done in Denmark?
Oh, I don't think it's a coincidence at all. I think there's just such a strong, healthy sporting culture in Denmark. Youth development programs, you know, the opportunity to go to secondary school at the same time, you know, have all the support and time you need to take care of whichever sport you do. If you're amongst sort of the top tier, the big talents, then Danish Sports Federation, Cycling Federation especially, they go a long way, or they go out of the way to sort of help the talents, and there's a strong continental scene. And I think, you know, for every year there's pros that do well, that encourages, you know, the youth categories to surely that inspires a lot of kids to sort of go out and cycle. Summer in Denmark is and the Tour de France, they go hand in hand. You know, it's massive. It's everywhere. It's on the telly. It's on the radio. It's in the newspaper. It's 24/7 really. So it really, you know, it's the whole sporting culture there is in Denmark that makes the difference that we now are reaping the benefits of now.
Incredible period for Danish cycling movement. What's the explanation? Is it a combination of things, just a coincidence?
This is Kasper Askren of Quickstep.
There's been a strong generation coming up, and the 94, 95, 96 generation has been really dominant, even from the youth categories. And we've just become professionals now, and you're still seeing that super high level. So I don't think there's any particular secret to it. It's just always been a strong generation.
Is there something in the support system at schools as well? Do you get extra help when you're a talented athlete?
Well, we have a really, really strong continental program that prepares the riders really well. And I think the bike clubs also, the local clubs also do a really good job of teaching the riders how to behave and how to have the right approach to training and cycling, and I think it's just a good system to grow up in, all the way from the local clubs up through the continental ranks, and makes the transition into the pro ranks easier.
And finally, I guess riding the Grand Départ of the Tour next year in Denmark would mean a lot to you.
Yeah, for sure. I hope very much I'm going to be at the start. We're passing right through my hometown on stage 3, and we're getting even as close as 100 meters from my house. So, it would be super special to do that race.
This is Michael Valgren of EF Education Easy Post, who would have been a favourite to win a stage in this Tour de France had he been able to take the start line. Unfortunately for Valgren, a heavy crash at La Route d'Occitanie in June, not long before the start of the Tour de France, ruled him out of the race.
The clubs where we're starting from, they support us really well. I think they've been doing that for many years already. But I think what changes is since Bjarne didn't have his team, you know, we got more spread over across teams and we got more our chances. I think that's also a reason. And then I think the youth is just now is really, you know, focused and really, really serious, and there is just some good talent, I guess, and strong genes.
And is this golden generation that you have now, is that making a difference in Denmark in terms of the profile of cycling, the coverage that it's getting?
Like for me, I think it was nice to get a degree, so I always know if I stop cycling, I can do something else at least, or have some options. So, and that's actually the mentality most have. Like they give it a school a go until they're like first or second year senior, and then they give it like a few go years with like becoming professional. If that doesn't happen, then they can go back to university.
And what can we look forward to next year? I mean, you know, there have been cases. London in 2007 kind of sparked an interest in the UK in cycling, and it coincided with a similar generation of talent. Could the same thing happen, do you think, with the Grand Départ in Copenhagen next year?
Oh, I sure hope so. I think cycling is already getting bigger and bigger every year in Denmark. It's like one of the biggest sports now, outside of football and handball, I guess. So we're slowly getting there. Hopefully, like this also will attract some more money into the sport, to the smaller clubs, because I think that's what really is struggling at the moment, to find the sponsors for these small clubs, the small teams, to keep it going. We saw last year Danish pro Conti team went down to Conti team. So hopefully the tour starting of Grand Départ in Denmark will help find the money as well. Then I'm sure we'll see some great talents coming again.
So my name is Rasmus Novak Franklin. I'm a co-editor at Filter.dk, online cycling media, probably the biggest in Denmark, I think, in Scandinavia even. And I'm currently on paternity leave, though, and at the moment I'm also writing my thesis in history. What you need to understand from, like, because it was a movement, like, that started many years ago with people being like, we should get the tour here. And cycling has a big pull in what you would call, like, probably the upper middle class. What do you call that mammal, middle-aged men in Lycra? I mean, they are also very, very present here in Denmark. And I guess when you get a pull in that group segment, then some of them will be very well connected and And for example, our former Prime Minister, Lars Løkke Rasmussen, was also part of a big part of getting the Tour de France here. And he is a very eco-cyclist as well. So it's that part of that group that really got the thing moving to get the Tour here. And the reasons behind it, the arguments have actually kind of changed over time for why you should get the Tour here. I think when you really get down to it, people just really thought it would be great to have the Tour de France in Denmark and show off our country. Whether it'll be economically beneficial is an argument that we still have to this day when the Tour is here. Because I think in the end, people just really enjoy cycling, enjoy the Tour, want to get it here, and then we'll see what we'll get out of it on the other end.
Well, I'm firmly middle-aged man in Lycra. I will not be anything like as unkind to suggest that you're in that category because you're a much younger man than me. What is the status of Bjarne Riis these days? Because, of course, the only Danish Tour de France winner. Now, I'm old enough to remember in 2007 when he finally confessed to taking EPO when he won his tour in 1996. He offered to give back his yellow jersey, very symbolically. He was briefly erased from the Roll of Honour. I remember in the build-up to the London start in 2007, they released all of the material, the road book and everything. Bjarne Riis's name was left blank from 1996. That, of course, was the first full Christian Prudhomme Tour de France. A small controversy this morning because Bjarne Riis was not part of the presentation. He does seem to be persona non grata around the Tour de France. What's the actual story? Because the Tour are saying, well, we didn't really invite riders, but it is nevertheless always a difficult one when a former winner of the race also has an asterisk against that performance, and the Tour is in this terrible bind, whether these people are part of the race's history or not.
Yeah, I think that's a very good question, actually. I'm struggling with how honest I should be on this, and I think I'm just going to go full honesty with it, really, because it has to do with the era you're referring to, the 90s, the golden generation you also talked about, which is now we're seeing a rebirth of. We have been struggling a lot with how to deal with this. Bjarne Riis has probably taken like the big part of the fall because he was the one who won the Tour de France, whereas other people like Rolf Sørensen, Brian Holm, Jesper Skibby, they haven't been punished as hard for what they did. Maybe also because Brian Holm was earlier with admitting, and Bjarne Riis probably went a little bit too long with his secrets, and he also denied the hardest maybe. So I think it's kind of like a coincidence that there was like somebody has to pay for what happened. And Bjarne Riis has probably been the biggest persona in Danish cycling with CSC and Saxo Bank as well. So I really just think that it's a punishment that maybe not be fair. I think everybody can agree on that because he's actually done a lot of good for cycling as well in Denmark. The voice of the young people, the young riders who are riding now, a lot of them rode for Bjarne Riis's country team, Virtu Cycling. And they're also very outspoken about him being a big part of them being where they are now. So maybe he shouldn't be punished, but I guess that's just the way it is, that there's a big stain on cycling.
It's one of the big things in cycling, isn't it? Can a leopard change their spots? You know, riders from those eras who undoubtedly doped, whether they confessed or not, in charge of teams later, and whether or not they were able to effect a cultural change within the peloton. I mean, it's really noticeable to me, certainly, that the doping scandals, if you want, of today are so much more watered down than. I mean, it may be that the raids on the Bahrain Victorious team, for example, are the tip of an iceberg. We know that there have been investigations into some of the individuals in the management at Bahrain Victorious. But what's the attitude of the cycling public and the general public? Is there a kind of a veil of cynicism around cycling where everyone just kind of, as they do in some other countries, you'll hear people just assume that they're all doped, or, you know, the sport is still struggling to shake off those associations. What's the kind of general mood in Denmark?
As I mentioned, I'm writing my thesis right now, and in that regard, I've interviewed a lot of the current cyclists, actually, and I asked them about that particular question, like, when you go around saying you're a pro racer, what reception do you get? And a lot of them also still get this, oh, you're a pro bike racer, so have you taken doping? You must have been doped, right? And so I think there's a lot of lack of knowledge about, people just think of cycling as the same thing as in 2007 and in 1996, whereas if you really get into it, it gets less dramatic because you realize that the spectrum of doping has decreased a lot. Like, it's not the heavy stuff is hopefully gone, but there's still a lot of cynicism regarding it. But when you go to the tour, you don't really hear anybody talk about it. I think people might still think that they are doping, the people that don't know, but the fans and the people who follow cycling, I think they understand that this sport has changed.
Let's hear from three riders who have ridden through the sea of people waving Danish flags this weekend. A Danish hero, Mikkel Merkur, the American Joe Dombrowski, and first, another Dane, Chris Juul Jensen, who capped the weekend with a win for his Bike Exchange teammate, Dylan Groenewegen.
Oh, it's been an absolutely, a fairy tale week for me, to be honest. I have a relation to more or less every stage. I live 3K away from where we had the time trial. I used to live in, I have a summer house where we rode through yesterday. I used to live in the town that we started in today. I mean, it's just been absolutely fantastic. It's exceeded all my expectations I had before I came to this race. So for Dylan to then pull it off with a win today, just, you know, it's the cherry on the top. So couldn't be happier for him, couldn't be happier for the entire team.
Will that be the one memory that will live with you for life?
The tour start in Denmark was unforgettable, and I think every rider feels the same way. And I can only imagine it's a matter of years before it's back, because it's just been everyone's had their mind blown. It's been absolutely fantastic. Such great crowds, such great people. I knew it would be like that, but I don't think all the other foreign riders did. But it's been great. It's been absolutely great.
Mate, the last day in Denmark, how's it been?
It's actually, I have to say, I've never seen a crowd like this in my life. No. It's incredible. I mean, 200K yesterday, I think 160 of it was like 10 people deep. You don't hear the radio because it's just noise.
Does it make you sort of just like, do you catch yourself and just sort of smile and just go, this is just actually ludicrous?
Yeah. I mean, I was enjoying it the last couple of days. It's like, you really feel like this is the biggest sporting event in the world. I have no idea how many people there were out there, but I feel like we can say millions.
It's going to be a bit of a come down going to France, just back to the normal hundreds of thousands,
yeah,
isn't it?
No, it's going to be a real, well, yeah.
It was a long wait for this Grand Depart, but Denmark has done the Tour de France and cycling proud, do you think?
Absolutely. I'm so proud of how we showed Denmark to the world of cycling. This was something that I looked very much forward to, and I think Denmark and all the people who came to cheer on the road really showed the best side of us.
And lastly, the next generation of Mikkel Merkur or Mads Pedersen will somewhere have been watching in the crowd, being inspired by seeing the Tour on Danish roads.
Absolutely. That's one of the key points that I hope the most for with this Grand Depart in Denmark, that hopefully we inspire more kids to start riding the bike.
And memories for you to last a lifetime.
Absolutely. This is for a lifetime.
At the finish in Sonnebor, as we waited for the riders, I spoke again to Michael Rasmussen, who now works as a journalist reporting on the race for the Danish media. And in a way, he embodies the rise, fall and rebirth of Danish cycling. I asked him if he considered the Grand Depart a success.
Well, it's been an amazing reception of the Tour de France, and it's been long coming. It should have been here last year, but it collided with the Euros soccer championships. And that just made the expectations grow even higher. I reckon about maybe half the population of this country has watched cycling live these days.
What about the spectators? What's your impression? Are they cycling fanatics, sports fanatics, or just almost celebrating Denmark this weekend?
Well, cycling is maybe the second sport in Denmark next to soccer. But for the past, say, three decades, cycling has had a, and Tour de France in particular has had a very special role due to the very extensive coverage and television and of course due to the results made by the riders in the past. It might not have been a whole lot to celebrate from a sports point of view in terms of spectacular racing, but you know, the people they made a spectacle.
In terms of the generation of Danish riders now, what do you think has created that generation, and what do they think of, for example, you know, your part in the history of Danish cycling?
Denmark is a fairly wealthy country, and cycling is an expensive sport. And you know, as a young rider, you do need a lot of support from your parents in terms of transportation and material. And the entire educational system is quite well geared for elite sports. So if you do have some kind of talent and you do need some kind of liberty, you know, you have all the possibilities to exercise your sport at the highest level while you actually get an education next to it. And I believe that is something that has changed over the years and made it a pretty good place to fulfill your dreams if you want to become an elite sportsman at the highest level.
And lastly, if you have one memory of this weekend, what will it be?
Oh, that would certainly be the way that the Danes has received the Tour de France and really taking it in. I suppose that would be it'll be some long-lasting memories for this entire country. It's been truly amazing to see the amount of people on the roads.
And what's the kind of media and political reception been? I mean, it must have been seen as a huge success.
Yeah, well, you know, as always, when you have these giga sports events, it's always the matter of, you know, how much does this cost? And I believe, you know, maybe at the end of the day, the bill, the official bill will come to something between 20 and 25 million euros. But, you know, that's really nothing. You know, it could have been 100 million euros and it would still have been worthwhile, because this is just going to be a celebration for the entire country. And you can't really measure that in millions or thousands or anything like that.
And there could be a future rainbow jersey or yellow jersey on the shoulders of one of the little boys or girls who've been inspired by today.
Absolutely. This you know, this should inspire an entire generation to go out on the bikes. And I know that every little village around the course and around Denmark, they have had their own little child tour in these days and the weeks leading up to it as well. So, you know, it has obviously, these 3 days has a big impact, but there's a lot of little things going on around which has impacts out in all the small communities around Denmark.
So where does the Danish Grand Départ stand in the list of exceptional Grand Départ of the recent history? I mean, I can think of Yorkshire. The crowds were just as big, the reception was just as enthusiastic and knowledgeable there, I think. How about for you, Michael?
Well, for me, this has been comparable to the Grand Départ in London in 2007. I believe we started on Trafalgar Square and had the course going through Hyde Park, and it was just absolutely amazing as well. But you have to bear in mind that London is a city with 12 million people, and you know, for Denmark it's only not even 6 million people, though you know, you have a lot higher percentage of the audience of the entire population. So maybe this should be ranked even higher.
Our weekend mini break in Denmark is coming to a close, Mitch. What have you made of it? Because the crowds have been unbelievable. It feels to me like Harrogate in 2014, when there was basically fans wall to wall on the Yorkshire hillsides, and the crowds today seem to me almost bigger than yesterday.
It's been a great atmosphere. Personally, I really love coming up here. First time I've been up here, so I also got to put my tourist hat on as well and enjoyed some of the delicacies around. But the fans have been great. It's really, after only coming to the Tour de France for the first time last year, and got a completely different experience because obviously we're at the tail end of the COVID sort of feel. This is feeling like, and from what I've spoken to a lot of guys, a real normal Grand Départ, as they say, and a Tour de France vibe.
Denmark is definitely celebrating cycling, though, isn't it? I mean, the number of people who've come out to see it, big crowds in Copenhagen, as we said, but, you know, out in these small towns, I mean, Sonneborg, obviously a reasonable-sized town, but it's sort of six deep, seven deep in places. Huge crowds. Obviously, cycling in Denmark's in a really good state of health at the moment, perhaps because of the generation of riders.
I totally agree, and especially what's been happening in the race as well with Magnus Cort Nielsen also, you know, getting that KOM jersey and then riding in the front alone today. What more could they really hope for? I guess maybe Mads to win today.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb and Lionel Burney.
We know what you're thinking. I just want jeans that look great, feel great, and hold up. At Ariat, we've been doing some thinking too. We're thinking about fit that moves with you, no matter where the ride takes you. Durability that stands up to hard work, harder play, and comfort that never quits. And all this thinking, it's really just about more living. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat jeans at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.